Very good morning to everyone. My name is Michael Whaley. The Free Congregation of Sauk County is an association of free men and women who come together to strengthen the spiritual, ethical, and moral dimensions of our lives and to be of service to our world. This means that our invitation is to all and that all are welcome here regardless of race, ethnicity, sexual orientation, gender expression, or, especially in this year, political persuasion.
Our first reading this morning is number 733. You can find it in your hymnal if you'd like to read on. A place of meeting. Out of wood and stone, out of dreams and sacrifice, the people build a home. Out of the work of their hands and their hearts and minds, the people fashion a symbol and a reality. May this house be truly a place of meeting, meeting one with another in warmth and joy and openness, meeting one with another in courage and love and trust. May all who enter here trust one another so surely that they dare to share the deep fires that burst into anger as much as the sweet spring waters that swell into laughter. The slow erosion of wounded tears as much as the soaring song. May these walls know silence as 100 hearts search inward, each for its own small spark of hope that might otherwise be snuffed out by the noise. May these rafters hear the voice of the child as surely as that of the orator, and the sound of the lute, the clack of the typewriter, the swish of the broom, and know that all are as holy as the shout of a million stars. May the rain fall lightly on this house, the sun shine warmly, the winds blow softly, and bless it as a place of joy and peace. Today we light a candle as a symbol of the light that draws us and unites us. Our next reading is number 682 from the Navajo Indians of North America. Beauty is before me, and beauty is behind me. Above me and below me hovers the beautiful. I'm surrounded by it. I am immersed in it. In my youth, I am aware of it, and in my old age, I shall walk quietly the beautiful trail. In beauty it is begun, in beauty it is ended. For those of you who have not met me yet, my name is Rob Brink. I'm a citizen of Janesville, Wisconsin. Was born in Michigan, moved over here, grew up over here, and went away, served 15 years in ministry, got to the end of it and realized I don't believe that anymore. So I'm very grateful to have a place like this where I can continue to preach, because I'm not really welcome in that church anymore. So thank you for this opportunity. I appreciate it. The last time I was here, well, first, before we begin, how's the sound level? Can everybody hear me all right? You doing okay? Good. The last time I was here, I encouraged everyone to take collective action, to work together as a community to do more than we could accomplish on our own. And at the end of the service, one of our members approached me and said something along the lines of, I appreciate what you said, but if you're a speaker and they start with the compliment, you know that there's always a but. I appreciate what you said, but I've been doing collective action my entire life. And it's somebody else's turn. I'm tired, I'm getting older, and I wonder sometimes if we actually even accomplish anything. I look around and I don't even know. The problem with asking me a question is in real time is you generally get my dumbest answer, which is what she received, which was, There, don't worry, you actually did do awesome things, everything is great, completely invalidating her feelings and ignoring the larger question. So I went home and I wrote this. Because her question wasn't really, are things getting better? Her question was really something like, I'm getting older. I'm getting tired. And I don't know if all of the life and work that I invested, I don't know if that really accomplished anything. It's not really a question at all, is it? It's a statement of the human condition. And it deserves a deeper response. Our culture, our American culture, trains us to accept only two realities. There is the thrill of victory and the agony of... Yes. Which means the average American TV life does not look like a bell curve. This is what an average human life looks like. And an average American TV life looks like this. Right? We just cut off the second half of the bell curve and pretend that doesn't happen. The TV life looks like this. You're born. Yay! You take your first steps. Yay! You go to school. First date. First kiss. Yeah, yeah, yeah! You go out, you grow up, you do amazing things, and then the story ends. Roll credits. Nothing else to see here. Because no one wants to talk about what comes next. We don't do tragedy in America. If Romeo and Juliet were written by Quentin Tarantino, then she would take her sleeping potion, she would wake up, she'd find Romeo. What? Romeo? Dead? Romeo? And she'd take the knife and she'd stab it into her heart. No. She'd take the knife and she'd go kill Bill on everybody. The Capulets, the Montagues, everybody's gotta die. Except maybe Mercutio because he's cool. And like the two of them ride away on a helicopter. Right? Now, why didn't Shakespeare write it then? Because it's a horrible story. It's an awful story. His version is way better. The only redeeming quality that story has is that if you identify with the protagonist for the space of 2 hours, you get to believe, you get to feel like you're invincible. You get to ignore the truth of the situation. Shakespeare wrote tragedies. Euripides wrote tragedies. The Norse, the Vikings, they built an entire ethos out of tragedy. Ragnarok is coming. The gods are going to lose. And I go to fight with the gods. That's a great story. The Buddhists built an entire religion out of tragedy. The first noble truth is life is
suffering.
Every great culture embraces tragedy. Except us. That's because we're awesome. We pretend that life is not a bell curve. We only want to talk about the first half, which leaves us completely unprepared to deal with, if we're really lucky, fully half of our life. The closest we ever get is we talk about quitting. Losing, throwing in the towel, giving up. Those losers, those quitters. Am I the only one that noticed the negative connotations associated with every one of those words? That's how we talk about each other. That's how we talk about ourselves. But if you examine that metaphor, throwing in the towel, you look at that just a little more closely, you'll see something more. What does that mean? For those of us who are not into sports references, can someone who's into boxing explain what's throwing in the towel? Yeah?
Yeah. The boxer and the coach make a decision not to come out of the corner for another round.
Right.
They submit to defeat.
Yeah, they accept defeat.
They accept defeat.
And even... If the guy's getting a snot kick out of him, yeah, generally a guy could be a girl. If the fighter is getting a snot kick out of him, the ring coach can literally take their towel and throw it into the middle of the ring to spare their life. to protect them from permanent brain damage and give them a chance to fight again. So throwing in the towel isn't quitting. Not really. It's accepting a short-term loss in order to make a larger play possible. Like maybe he goes out and does Rocky, or she, and like pumps up and comes back even stronger. Or maybe they just go home and live a life without having to slur their speech forever. Like, that's a good thing, right? That's worth it. Let's take that even further. What if we're not throwing in the towel? What if we're passing the baton? That feels a little better, doesn't it? It's a little more positive imagery. It's about giving your absolute best. You run your race. You leave everything on the field. Your lungs are burning. Your legs are jelly. And you stretch out your arm. And with your last strength, you drop the baton in the next person's hand. And they go. That's an amazing story. Why don't we talk about that? Because it's hard. It's way harder to run a marathon than it is to run a sprint. Or sorry, not a marathon, a relay. Because you have to depend on other people. You have to rely on other people. You have to make the pass. Even in Olympic level athletes, how many times do they drop the baton? 1 in 10? It happens. A lot. Which is why it's just easier to say, I got this. I'm just going to run my race, dude. You do your thing, I'll do mine. Because if you want to run a relay, you need a team. And teams? You don't want a team. Teams are made up of people, and people are dumb. Nobody wants a team. The only reason we even have teams is because we literally have no choice. There are things you simply cannot do without a team. If you are getting the snot kicked out of you in the ring, you cannot go, time out, I'm going to just go get this towel. No. You need someone to save your behind. You need someone to speak on your behalf. You're running a relay. You can't pass off to yourself. There has to be somebody else there to take it forward. Wish you could. You just can't. Because this isn't about endings. It's about the larger story. It's not really about death. It's about the larger picture of life. It's about choosing to see an ending, any ending, as an opportunity, as something more. See yourself as something small. See life as something infinite. If you can get there mentally, you can step outside of yourself and your situation. These are really smart choices. Throwing in the towel is better than being beat to death. I think we can all agree. Okay? Passing the baton is better than running the entire race yourself and settling for last place. Because the story is always bigger than you. We all stand on the shoulders of giants. We all recognize that, right? Anyone want to acknowledge a teacher or a parent? It's okay to talk. This is a two-way thing. Is there someone in your life that helped you get where you are? Yeah.
A teacher and a parent.
A teacher and a parent. His name was a preacher. He was Dick and Derek. They called him the pistol-packing preacher. Because he was rough around the edges. He worked up in Alaska, and he was in a bar, because he's sick of air, that's what he does. And this guy was a little past his limit. And he says, hey, preacher man, you think you're tough? Dick's like, you can go away, just sit down. Oh, come on, I can take you. So Dick says, I love bigger boys than you. Let's go. And the guy's like, what, seriously? I stand on his shoulders. And he stood on somebody else's shoulders. Isaac Newton is not the only one who stood on the shoulders of giants. And someday, people will build on the work that we leave behind. It is always, always, always bigger than you. 150 years ago, you could buy people in the market in America. 100 years ago, women got the right to vote. 50 years ago, so did black people. 10 years ago, gay marriage was a pipe dream. Inconceivable. 100 years from now, what will they think of us? How much further will they go? How much better will they be? As a nation, as a species, we are getting better. And any step forward, no matter how small, no matter how halting, is a step forward for all of us, for all time, which means it's always worth it. It takes time and effort to get someone in your corner, someone you trust enough to make that call on your behalf. You have to hand them a towel. You trust them to see the thing you can't see, to say the thing you don't want to say. I quit. He quits. She quits. Trust me. I know they say they don't, but just trust me. Tomorrow, they'll be really grateful that you let them quit. I'm going to speak on their behalf. That takes an immense amount of trust, an immense amount of time to get someone like that in your life. And a student? Is there anything worse than a student? The very best you could possibly hope for is they take your thing and they mess it up. This thing that you really care about and you invested your life in, they're going to change it. If you're really lucky, they make it better. At the very least, they make it different. You take this thing and you hand it to them. This applies in 1,000 places, but a very simple one is a durable power of attorney. I won't ask you to raise your hand because the majority of Americans don't have a durable power of attorney or a living will. When you literally are not here to make these decisions, so you trust someone else to make those decisions for you, it costs you next to nothing to make that decision now. It can cost you a whole lot to make that decision later. It's cheap, it's easy, and it matters. Same thing with insurance of basically any kind. Health checkups, financial plannings, and 100 other things we know we ought to do, but we generally just don't because we don't want to think about it. It's kind of scary. It's kind of dark. Bart Campolo offered a metaphor for this that I found very, very helpful. He came to speak at my college, and he's speaking to a room, auditorium, full of bright-eyed college students. Got the fresh degree, they're ready to take on the world. And he says, "You're all gonna die. You and 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 you, you. You're all gonna die. And everyone you love is gonna come and throw you in a hole in the ground and toss dirt on your face, and then they're gonna come back to church and eat potato salad." I thought, wow. That made an impact on my life. Because just because you choose not to see it doesn't mean it's not there. The thing we need to learn is that acknowledging a difficult truth doesn't make it worse. Ignoring a difficult truth doesn't make it better. Just the opposite, right? Facing the thing you don't want to face makes it possible to make your move. It's the only thing that gives you options to respond. Otherwise, you're constantly caught by surprise. Bart Campolo, Tony's son, offered another metaphor that I thought was really useful. He says, imagine you go out, you rent a cabin, a hideaway in the woods. And you bring, this is your perfect vacation. So you bring maybe your whole family, or if you're not into family, maybe you bring all your passable friends, or maybe you're the alone-y type, and all you want is a good book and a warm fire. Whatever it is your perfect week. You're in the cabins, you're experiencing this week, and then you get to Wednesday. And you know that from this point forward, you have less time than you did. You are past the 50% point. At which point you say, oh, And then you just do that for like the next 4 days and you go home. Right? Oh! I got 4 days left. I am sucking every ounce of juice out of this thing. I am making the most of this. Specifically because, exactly because, you know it won't last. On the last day, if you're me, you go to like some quiet little corner where no one's probably going to see it, but maybe someday they will, and you like carve your name. Don't tell people I do that, but I do. Just make it, give them a gift. Maybe you clean up the place. It's the end of the week. You're done using it, right? So what, you just set fire to the curtains and walk away? Like Stallone with the flames going behind you? Just do the slow walk. Because you're done, right? No! This meant so much to you. You want it to mean so much to somebody else. So maybe you clean it up. Maybe you fix it up. Maybe you go out and fill the wood box so that the next person can light a fire without having to bring any in. Maybe you leave behind that book or a deck of cards so that the next person can experience the thing you experience. The only compensation I can offer for the fact that dealing with gathering a team is difficult, because it just is that it's worth it, and it's really, really fun to just go pull Yoda on people. You get to a certain point, you've established yourself, right? You got to the last day, and it's time to hand off to the next person. So why not just mess with them? Like, talk in aphorisms all the time, because you can. I knew a lady, she was 85 years old, and every time they did the parade on the 4th of July, she stood up on top of a float, and she was the Statue of Liberty. Why? Because no one dared to tell her no. She was 85, what are you gonna do, tell her no? She was just gonna do it. So you make ridiculous demands, you wear outrageous clothes, you have a blast with it. Why? Because who cares? Pretty soon you're going to be gone. You might as well enjoy it. Right? There are two missions in life. Build a team that you can trust and train someone up to take your place. Choose to see yourself as part of a larger story of life spiraling up and out into the universe without you, but that's okay, because they're still gonna go. And everything you do, every step forward, is a step that brings them forward. This is hard work, which is why most people don't do it, but you are not most people. If you were, you wouldn't be here today. It's good work, and it can be a lot of fun. Life is a bell curve. You start out here, where if you're lucky, you make it to the potty on time and you chew solid food. Then you go up and you get to do awesome stuff and see awesome things, and then you come down and you wind up back to where it's you're lucky if you can chew solid food and make it to the potty on time. That's the reality of our situation. And if you only remember one thing, remember this. Ignoring that reality doesn't make it better. And facing that reality doesn't make it worse. Thank you. Time for Q&A. And Penn Jillette addresses that from Penn and Teller, the magician. Penn Jillette talks about, what do you say to someone when you come through a funeral line? And he says, the best thing that I've been able to come up with is to just look them in the eye and shake their hand and say, this is the worst thing ever. I'm so sorry. Because everyone else is like, oh, God just wanted another little angel in heaven. Screw God, I want my kid, you know? You don't put up with that. I'm sad. Is it okay for me to be sad one day? Can you allow me that? kind of worked up about it because people deserve an opportunity to grieve. They deserve an opportunity to say, that was my friend, and I miss my friend, and today I'm going to be sad. And that's okay. That is completely appropriate for the law. Who has a really, really fancy ring that they would be willing to loan me for about 2 minutes? Anybody? Ring on your finger. Anybody? Yeah, hit it. Which of these two rings is more valuable? You see it?
No.
Got one made out of gold, the other one made out of plastic. Which of these two rings is more valuable? It really fits, right?
Yeah.
Can everybody agree that this is more, like, if I had to sell it to you, what would you pay more money for? Are we all in agreement? Why?
It's rare.
It's rare. Do you get it? If life were not finite, it would not be precious. It is the end that makes it precious.
I'm sure you're going to be right back.